like to acknowledge that this research project was supported by a 2006 American Nurses Foundation grant. We were lucky enough to get a grant to support this work. And the we that I'm talking about is Dr. Diane Hatton at the end of the podium. Is my friend and research colleague, and we have a little bit of a tag team this afternoon. It's my purpose this afternoon to present findings from our exploratory qualitative community-based participatory research study that examined the impact of the prisoner healthcare co-payment policy on the health of women prisoners. And Dr. Hatton's going to fill in the skeleton, if you will, on our method and some of the methodological challenges that we faced, so that I can try and focus on the findings and just give you the briefest of information about the method. So our study aims were to analyze women prisoners' use of the co-payment for health care, analyze how co-payments affect women prisoners' access to health care, and identify how women prisoners view the impact of co-payment on their health. Women represent the fastest growing segment of the U.S. jail and prison population. They have a very high incidence of serious health concerns, including HIV, hepatitis C, TB, MRSA, and sexually transmitted infections. They have higher pregnancy rates than their non-incarcerated cohorts in the general population, and histories of violence, depression, substance abuse, and other mental illnesses. Therefore, adequate health care is one of the most pressing problems facing incarcerated women. Prisoners in many states, actually in most states in the United States, and in most local jurisdictions, jails, of which there are thousands of them in the United States, are required to make a co-payment for health care they request while in jail or in prison, much as we pay a co-payment when we seek health care in our own communities. The Federal Prisoner Health Care Co-Payment Act of 2000 authorizes the collection of a fee for health care services requested by a prisoner. Exempt from fees are preventive health care, emergency services, prenatal care, diagnosis and treatment for contagious diseases, mental health, and substance abuse treatment. According to the Act, prisoners are not to be charged for visits that result from a staff referral or for follow-up visits for chronic conditions. Prisoner consent is not required for the collection of the fee, and a minimum of $2 was set in this act. As I said, this is an exploratory study, and Dr. Hatton is really going to share the specifics of both some of our methodological issues confronted in this study and how we got interested in this work and how this work was informed by earlier studies. We conducted 6 focus groups and had a convenient sample of 31 women that were released from jail or prison. The characteristics of our participants, our mean age was 38 years old. The mean educational preparation was approximately 12 years of education. Mean number of children is 2.4, 7, 2.5 children, past incarceration, the mean was approximately, you know, was around 6, a little over 6 incarcerations in their lifetime. Days in jail, the mean was 530. Past incarcerations in prison was a little over, approximately 1.3 previous incarcerations in prison. And months incarcerated in prison, the mean was 29 months. Our ethnicity of our participants, 19% were African American women, 26% were Hispanic Latino women, 45% white, and 10% identified as other sample. We had the women fill out a brief demographic form that covered those kinds of characteristics just from the previous slide, and we used 4 open-ended questions. We asked our participants to tell us about a time when they used a copay while in jail or prison, to tell us about a time when they decided not to see a physician or a nurse because of the copayment. We asked them how they thought those experiences had affected their overall health, and we asked them if there was anything else they wanted to tell us about their health care that they received while in jail and prison. I'm going to basically move forward. We used a consensual qualitative research strategy to construct a shared understanding of our qualitative data. All of our focus groups were transcribed verbatim, and we used those data to analyze qualitatively. The major limitations are that we provide only the perspective of the former prisoners, and we do not include the views of staff working in jails or prisons. There's much more available currently in the literature about providers' positions about healthcare than there are prisoner positions, and so we opted to try to focus on their perspectives and give voice to their experiences. The other limitation is that we relied on former rather than currently imprisoned women. And Dr. Hatner will talk a little bit about why we made those decisions from a fairly pragmatic approach to conducting research. Our findings, some global findings, and then I will share with you the women's own words and language. The copayment hinders women prisoners' access to health care in several different ways. First, we discovered the inconsistent administration of the copayment policy. Second, copayments contributed to interruptions in care, both because women were unable to pay the copayment and opted to forego health care, but also because of the quality of health care and long waits for care that existed in the culture of prison health care. Finally, the culture of prison health care and treatment by the prison health care professionals contributed to poor quality care, avoidance of professionals, unnecessary suffering, and poor health outcomes. In response, women developed self-advocacy skills to manage their health care needs and the challenges faced by the prison health care system. Although the policy exempts copayments for diagnosis and treatment of contagious diseases and mental health issues, the women reported their request to be seen for these conditions resulted in a copayment of $3 in jail and $5 in the prison for each visit. A number of the women said, "There was a TB scare, and I put in an inmate request to get a TB test. I was in a room with two people who tested positive for TB. I had to pay a copayment, and I had to pay for my TB test. another said, I have mental issues and I really needed to see a psychiatrist, but they charged me twice to go see him. The first time I went, they told me to read this piece of paper, it might help you. It took me another month to be seen again and I had to make another copayment. Follow-up visits for chronic conditions and contagious diseases are, according to the policy, exempt from copayments. However, the women report being charged for health problems such as asthma, chronic mental health problems, and TB testing. As one participant stated, every time I would go see medical for every little thing that went wrong, I'd have to fill out a request, even if they told me to come back. Prisoners often had to see multiple providers and pay multiple copayments for the same request. As one woman noted, when you put in a copay to see the doctor, you got to see the nurse first. That's $5. Then the nurse schedules you to see the doctor. That's another $5. There's layers of copayments. Women who worked in key jobs within the jail received priority in their health care and often made no copayment. One of the women who worked as a cook described her experiences. When you work trustee, which is a special status that allows people to work, you get a lot more. They come to the trustee dorm every day. They have a certain time for meds. The med line is short. I see a doctor right away. I never see a nurse. I go right to the doctor. The copayment was also problematic because of the poor quality health care the women perceived. As one woman stated, it's not worth what you're paying for. Many reported receiving palliative care such as Motrin, Celebrex, Tylenol, athlete's foot cream, a paper to read about anxiety, or advice to drink more water rather than more definitive treatment for their concerns. Some of the examples from the women said, for a lot of the ailments, they tell you to drink more water. Your eye hurts, drink more water. Your toe hurts, drink more water. That's what they do. Or they give you Tylenol. That's all they want to do for you. Another indicated, I've been in jail so many times that unless I'm deathly ill, I don't go. Water and Motrin are their answers for everything. They won't answer my questions. I don't go. The women described other examples of problematic health care, including minimizing health concerns, inattention to their concerns, and misdiagnoses. Here's an example of minimizing. I have asthma, so when I went in, I said I need my inhalers. I'm on two different inhalers. They listened to my lungs and kicked me out of the room. They said they weren't going to give me my inhalers. I need an inhaler. Oh, well, you know your lungs can sound clear 1 minute and then all of a sudden they can get real tight. You need your inhalers. An example of inattention. The last time I was incarcerated, the medical was truly atrocious. I had a broken jaw and staph infection and it was like pulling teeth to get them to help me. I just got the 2 minute sign. So I'm going to move forward in some of my examples here. I'd like to move to just an example of a problematic health encounter. The women often experience their encounters with health care professionals as dismissive, often resulting in their decisions not to return to care. When one said, I went to see the psychiatrist, I didn't get anything. I saw him through the glass-barred window and he asked me a couple of questions and that's it. And it's $3 for that. I'd like to just give you an example of the kinds of decisions they had to make around the lack of money for co-payments. I didn't want to spend the money I had because I knew I needed it for bus fare when I was released. Or as another said, the co-payment was a problem because I knew it wasn't my money. I didn't want to take my family's money or whoever put money on my books. An example of the long waits and concerns about health care. One noted, it takes too long to be magazine, if they're going to take my money immediately, why don't they see me immediately? Another said, I would go into jail and they would charge me $3 to see the psychiatrist and it would take a week or two to get to see him. He'd tell me to drink some warm milk and maybe put a little honey in it or something to calm me down. He'd just try to put me off a little and not really give me any. Some of the consequences of the co-payment and the poor quality health care on health was that the women talked about avoiding health care professionals, unnecessary suffering, and poor health outcomes. Some said, now I think all doctors are less caring and very untrustworthy because of my experiences there. They don't really care, so it makes me shy back from them and not want to go because of my experiences. An example of unnecessary suffering, I went the whole time I was incarcerated, which was 3 years, without taking my psychiatric medications, and I've been taking those medications since I was 12 years old. Okay, I just wanted to acknowledge that women develop self-advocacy skills to advocate for themselves and also advocate for other women to help manage healthcare problems that were unattended to, and also to help manage some of the issues created by the prison healthcare system itself. So in conclusion, the co-payment policy hindered access to healthcare for women prisoners. They often endured health problems or sought care as a last resort only after problems worsened or because they lacked sufficient funds to make a copayment, and finally that they utilized self-advocacy skills to help themselves and